Welcome to season 4 of Swiss Impact with Benegis. I'm Sveta.
And I am Ben. The topic of season 4 is impactful businesses. Would you like to shift your capital to make positive impact and profit at the same time?
We will bring you amazing guests who are business owners, thought leaders, founders of impact investing funds, who will inspire you to invest with impact.
In this season, we will focus on high-impact, high-profit investment opportunities, which contribute to SDGs, better known as Sustainable Development Goals, as defined by United Nations.
We are hoping that when you watch this, you will shift your capital to serve all people and the environment.
We do not have time to wait for politicians and big banks to start acting on a big scale. Our aim is to establish an easy and quick match between impactful businesses and investors.
We will be broadcasting live every Friday afternoon at 3 p.m. Central European Time here on Swiss Impact with Benegis.
Impact is best when you invest. Good morning, afternoon, and evening to everyone. And good night to especially the ones from Far East.
Welcome back to our season 4, episode 9. And we continue supporting impactful businesses which create positive impact around the world. Today, we have a very, very, very special guest. I'm so excited to welcome him just in a couple of minutes. And this is a day when we are going to talk about history and evolution and future, of course, of impact investment.
And we start with inviting you and all your friends all over the world to watch our program. And yes, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel not to miss any future exciting episodes at youtube.com/Swiss Impact.
All right, Ben, let's start with your story as usual, but please keep it short. I'm too excited to welcome the guest.
Okay, so today I'm more looking forward to the stories of the guests too. We are aware that the world is changing and more regulations and rules are kicking in. That means we are getting new rules in place which are replacing the old rules. Things are changing. The world is changing. All the financial institutions are changing. But unfortunately, I sometimes see old wines are being put into new bottles. Unfortunately, the old wines are usually rotten and poisonous. So using questionable measuring methods, many companies can get themselves high ESG ratings despite of all the damages they are doing. And I believe that is what policymakers and businesses have to realize, is that real changes are happening also or mainly on the small and medium businesses and on those levels. And I consider ourselves as one of the lucky ones who are seeing such projects nearly each and every day. And many of them are starving for funding.
Right, Ben, I completely agree with you. You know, all kind of financial institutions, especially those claiming to be doing very impactful and sustainable investment, should stop hiding behind old rules and sayings like, we invest only in listed companies, or we check the ESG ratings of our business, etc., and look more holistic to true impact.
That's very, very true. So in conclusion, I'm glad that more and more financial institutions are coming, unfortunately, still bottom up and not top down in many Western countries. And that is where I personally believe that the governments and the regulatory boards have their work cut out in front of them to encourage or enforce this transition. Otherwise, none of the objectives, whether regarding the SDGs or the climate action goals, will be realized.
That's it.
Okay. Yes,
thank you, Ben. Now let's invite our guest into the studio. And I'm so happy to welcome Mr. and Sir Ronald Cohen, the chairman of Global Steering Group of Impact Investment. Hi, Ronnie. How are you doing? Where are you now?
Welcome, Ronnie.
To see you, Sveta and Ben. I'm speaking to you from Tel Aviv in Israel.
Great.
It's nice. Great. Warm weather, hopefully.
Yes.
We are really happy to have you at our show today. And for those who still don't know you, I would like to introduce you quickly to our viewers. So, Sir Ronald Cohen is a pioneering philanthropist, venture capitalist, private equity investor, and social innovator. To us, Ronnie, you are like the father of impact investment and European venture capital. You are the driving force of global impact revolution, which I personally believe in and also contribute. You serve as chairman of the Global Steering Group for Impact Investment, the Impact Weighted Accounts Initiative at Harvard Business School, and the Portland Trust. It's not all. You're also the co-founder and former executive chairman of Apex Partners Worldwide, a global private equity firm, and the co-founder of Social Finance UK, USA, and Israel, co-founder chair of Bridges Fund Management, and former co-founding chair of Big Society Capital. Last but not least, what I want to say, you are author of many books, including the book Impact: Reshaping Capitalism to Drive Real Change, which was published recently, 2020, and is Wall Street Journal bestseller. So welcome, Ronnie.
And this is also his book.
Yes, absolutely. The Impact Revolution. You can download it for free and read and act, right? So it's all about action.
Thank you. Thank you both.
Great. Ronnie, could you tell us more about your story? You know, we know that you are Oxford and Harvard educated. You were born in Egypt. And at the age of 11, you left the country as a refugee to UK with your family. So how did you become from a refugee to a social pioneer? How did that happen?
So Sveta and Ben, all of us are marked by our childhood and our upbringing. In my case, being forced to leave Egypt, which had been until then a very tolerant country, but Egyptian nationalism led by Nasser led to the expulsion of British and French citizens and Jews from Egypt. And coming to Britain, where I was welcomed, where I went to a state school, and from a state school went to Oxford because I found an inspiring teacher in the state school who believed in me and who coached me for my Oxford entrance exams, and then getting a scholarship, a Henry Fellowship, as it's called, to Harvard Business School. I've been helped during my life, and there's no doubt that I would not have been able to achieve the success that I've been lucky to achieve without my education. And so I have the same desire to help others. And I find myself in a position where I understand the investment business, but I also understand the social issues and the environmental issues that we confront. And so I have spent the last 22 years, really, bringing investment to deliver social and environmental solutions. And that's how Impact Investment was born.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I mean, I have a little bit of similar kind of background like you do. I was also traveling in a train in India, and there was a Dutch couple sitting and who just started talking to me about Netherlands, which I had never heard about. And he told me a lot of stories. And then they invited me to Holland. And short forward, I am today who I am. And also, like yourself, been only busy with impact investment for more than 25 years. And I heard that something very similar happened to you also, that somebody was touched by your father, and he gave you a chance. Would you like to share the story with us?
Somebody was touched by my father. Yes, the headmaster of the grammar school, Ben, where my father wanted me to be accepted when we arrived in May of 1957 in London, interviewed me. I spoke very little English, virtually no English. I just learned English over a few weeks. And my father said to the headmaster, look, it's not because he's my son, but if you take him, I guarantee you he will be top of the class. And the headmaster decided to give me a chance, if you like. And of course, I learned English, as children learn languages very quickly at the age of 11. And I had been a good student, so my father was going according to my performance as well as his desire to get me in. But it was the first break I got in life, if you like, to get into this school.
Right. And Ronnie, can you tell us which is the most important lesson you have learned in your life? You've been through many things, I guess, right? So what was the most important learning?
The most important lesson I have learned, Sveta, is we're ready to do big things very early on in life. And when I set out at the age of 26 to create Apex Partners, a lot of my friends and acquaintances then said to me, don't you think you should get a bit more experience? Now, I'd worked at McKinsey for a couple of years, and I'd worked in an investment fund for a couple of years, but I didn't have a lot of experience. And I realized that you couldn't learn to swim by doing exercises on the beach. If you see a major opportunity, which is how venture capital seemed to me at the age of 26, and it's a new field, you're ready to try to take advantage of it. And you should seize it with both hands. And that's why my very first book, The Second Bounce of the Ball, had as its primary lesson for entrepreneurs, start young, think big, and stick with it, because perseverance is obviously a very important part of success once you've started. Yeah.
Exactly.
Absolutely. I love it. Thanks for sharing with us. And why did you change from venture capital to impact investing? What was the trigger? How did that happen?
So I was at Oxford at a time when universities were very idealistic. It was the 60s, flower power, the campaign against nuclear armament, campaign for disarmament. And I caught some of that idealism. I felt that I wanted to have a career that was socially useful, as well as making money, which I knew I needed to do in order to look after my parents, who had no pension, had arrived in the UK in their early 40s, and would need my help in their old age. So I already had that set of values, if you like. And when I discovered the birth of venture capital in the mid 60s, when I was at Harvard Business School and felt, you know, this combination of venture capital, entrepreneurship and technology is going to be big. And mm-hmm. I want to be part of it. This is what I want to bring back to the UK and Europe more generally. I was moved to do so partly because there was very high unemployment in the UK at that time. And I saw venture capital as a way of creating jobs in the UK. And then as we became increasingly successful and large at Apex, managing billions and tens of billions of dollars, I realized that the investment we were making in backing entrepreneurs, who for the most part came from nothing, they weren't people who came from wealthy homes. They were, on the contrary, people who came from very modest homes on the whole. But backing them certainly helped them to move up in the world and to enrich the people in their company and around themselves. But I was very conscious of the increasing gap between rich and poor, which marked my career. And so when I reached the age of 53, in 1998, I said to my partners, I felt that, by the way, I had made enough money, more money than I could spend. I said to my partners, I'm going to leave at the age of 60 to devote the rest of my life to two major issues. One, social issues in general and ways of tackling them more effectively, going back to the connection with my background and having been helped and wanting to help others. And two, the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. I'm speaking to you from Tel Aviv. There was a terrorist attack, as you probably saw in your newspapers today.
Yeah, we heard.
You know, yesterday in Tel Aviv. I have an office in Ramallah for the Portland Trust in the West Bank, and an office in London. We work on economic development of the Palestinian economy, as well as the relief of social issues through impact investment on the Israeli side. So I said to my partners, I want to do more important things than just making money. I don't want my epitaph to read, he delivered a 30% return on investment annually. You know, there are more important things I feel that I can achieve during my life. And then luck comes into all our lives, right? Ben, you were saying you were lucky you found a Dutch couple in a railway carriage in India, sitting in front of you. And I got a phone call at the beginning of 2000 from the UK Treasury saying to me, we want to create a social investment task force to look at how we can tackle poverty more effectively. The more money we throw at it, the less we seem to be able to achieve. Will you look with a more entrepreneurial eye on how we can tackle the issue of poverty and all the social issues that derive from it? And that gave me the opportunity to look very deeply inside our system and led me to the conclusion that the reason we haven't dealt more successfully with social issues, despite government spending and despite philanthropic grants, is that we've been unable to bring investment until now to tackle social issues, to back social entrepreneurs. And it set me off on the road I've traveled over the past 22 years.
Wow. In that also, we have a little bit of common because I'm also the board of East West Institute, which is also, it was initiated or it started with the Palestine and Israel issues. So
absolutely.
I've also been involved with this. You are the chairman of GSG, the Global Steering Group for Impact Investment. Can you tell us a bit more about what is GSG?
Yes, indeed, Ben. Yes, GSG is a very important organization. It started after the G8 task force on social impact investment, which the British government again asked me to chair in 2013. Mm-hmm. And the report of the task force built on the experience of Britain with the social impact bond invented by Social Finance in London, very proud to have played a role in inventing it and developing it, and Bridges Ventures, the first really impact venture fund. And the government asked me to chair the task force to examine how the G7 countries could use impact investment to tackle social issues. As we looked across the world at the G7 countries, we began to realize that the world was changing, that values had changed, and young people didn't want to work for companies creating harm or buy their products, that investors had begun to realize how this would affect the profitability of the companies in which they invested. At that time, by the way, ESG investment was about $13 trillion. Today, it's over $40 trillion. And we basically put the notion on the table that the world had started to shift from economies that optimized risk and return to economies that optimize risk, return, and impact. And the government asked us to push this thinking globally after we delivered our report. Incidentally, our report was titled The Invisible Heart of Markets, because we saw impact then as the invisible heart of markets that guides their invisible hand. And this goes by, most of you are aware that Adam Smith coined the phrase, the invisible hand of markets, that if everyone seeks their own economic interest, the invisible hand of markets ensures that everybody's best interest is achieved. But Adam Smith actually had been proud of his first book, The Theory of Moral Sentiments, about how human beings by their nature want to help others out of altruism and empathy. And so in a way, impact coming together with the invisible hand of markets with bringing both sides of Adam Smith's thinking into action. So the GSG was created to continue the work of the G8 task force, and today we operate in 35 countries with a long string of countries still in which we will open what we call our national advisory boards, including Switzerland, incidentally. And our motto, and I know this will please you both, knowing a little bit about you from our conversations, our motto is to innovate, agitate, and orchestrate the advance of impact approaches and impact investment across the world. Because without changing our economic systems so that they bring solutions to our social and environmental challenges, our challenges are too great for us to be able to cope. Our governments are unable to cope with climate, unable to cope with the social and economic gaps that exist in our societies. And so the mission of the GSG is a very ambitious one, to shift our economies, to bring solutions to our big problems. And you know, if you look at what's been happening around the world, you can see just how much progress we've been able to make.
Right. Ronnie, I'm really looking forward to when Switzerland will finally join GSG. And can you share what have been concrete results and achievements of GSG so far? And why should the country join you?
So what we discover, Sveta, is that countries act as laboratories for other countries. When the UK first started to use social impact bonds, which for those who aren't aware of it, happened in 2010, when there was a social impact bond to tackle the issue of young prisoners going back to jail after they had been released, a major issue everywhere in the world. I'm sure Switzerland is no exception. 60% or more of young prisoners go back to jail after their release. And to tackle that issue, we invented the social impact bond, which is a security where the return depends, in this case, on a reduction in the number of prisoners that you achieve. And so we raised £5 million, and over 5 years, we reduced by 9.7% the number of prisoners going back to jail, and the investors got their £5 million back with a 3.1% a year return. So ideas like the social impact bond more generally pay for success vehicles of one kind or another. It's amazing that the social impact bond has inspired $1 trillion of sustainability-linked bonds and loans last year alone. $1 trillion, Ben and Sveta, not a billion, $1 trillion.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Wow. And so that thinking, if it is spread across the world, begins to be built on, and you begin to apply it and you begin to address social issues in all these different countries. So another example was the recommendation from the Social Investment Task Force to which I referred in 2000, was we need to create social investment banks. And we came up with the idea in the UK of using unclaimed assets lying in banks. So these are bank accounts that have been separated for a period, in the case of the UK, 15 years or more, to take these assets away from the banks. You pay anybody who appears to claim this money, even though they, you know, haven't been able to be traced and so on and so forth. So you keep a reserve, but use that money to create a social investment bank. So the UK released £400 million for Big Society Capital, which I was privileged to co-found and chair. Japan followed suit and liberated more than 10 times the amount in unclaimed assets. Korea has followed suit and is setting up a multi-hundred million dollar organization to play the role of an impact capital wholesaler. Canada and Australia have looked at it seriously. Canada's decided to go ahead with it. Australia just had a task force about it. So this is another example of showing how these new innovations can be spread across the world. Now, there are pressing social issues in every country. They're not always the same ones. But there are issues of immigration, for instance, which are common to many countries. We see social impact bonds in Massachusetts to take immigrants, teach them the language, get their qualifications recognized, and help bring them into jobs. And the state of Massachusetts pays a sum for everyone that is successfully placed in a job. Obviously, there are massive improvements in the lives of these immigrants. The state benefits because they begin to be taxpayers instead of receiving security, social security benefits. So there's a huge social and economic payoff. Now, we've got the issue of Ukrainian refugees. We can use these mechanisms where government budgets are very tight to bring investment money to solve problems the government sets as a high priority, but doesn't have the money to devote to it. And you recreate, in a way, what I lived through in venture capital. When you begin to give investment money to a social entrepreneur trying to help refugees to become integrated in their host countries, because you don't prescribe, as we do in traditional philanthropy, you would go and visit the refugees so many times and teach them this and that and so on and so forth. You're told, here are many millions of pounds or dollars or Swiss francs or whatever to achieve your business plan in helping these refugees. Use innovation, use technology, do whatever you think is best in order to achieve your objective as quickly and as efficiently as possible. And if you're successful in paying a 4 or 5% return to your investors, then you can raise twice as much. Yeah. And so that, you know, next time, or three times as much, just as a business entrepreneur does. So the role of the GSG is to innovate these new methods of doing things and spread them across the world, influence policymakers. And we're seeing the result now coming out in a lot of different ways.
Mm-hmm. Ronnie, it's so inspiring to listen to these cases again, because When I was just new in impact investing and I studied at Oxford, I read all this report about the prisoner social impact bond and other examples which you mentioned. But now it's like hearing from the source, it's just amazing. So to all the listeners today, I highly recommend to check all what Ronnie was mentioning. You find those reports online and you can read in more detail how it's really working if you are new. So there is a plenty of material to study.
So another thing we wanted to ask to you is that different places, because we have been also involved with impact investment since many, many years, is that different people have different definitions or different idea of impact investment. So what is impact investment in your world, in your reality? And are there many definitions or since you are one of the co-creators, it would be good to hear from you, what is impact investing?
So for me, impact investing is investment that aims to deliver both financial profit and measurable social and environmental returns. If you don't measure, you become ESG. You have the intention only. If you measure, you become impact investment. Today, ESG is about 40 trillion. Impact investment is over 2 trillion. And the efforts we're making on the measurement of companies' impacts and translating that into impact accounting will bring the 40 trillion of ESG to become impact investment. Because all of a sudden, every investor in a public or private company will be able to measure the impact performance of the company as well as its profit.
Right. Okay. And Ronnie, how many financial institutions are changing their investment strategies and joining impact investing sector in the countries that you're operating on, or maybe you know worldwide? What are the numbers?
So I would say today that 90% of companies have some type of ESG report. I would say that 90% of banks are beginning to measure ESG in their portfolio. The banking regulators are forcing them to do so. I would say that among investors today, over half of all professionally managed money has some ESG objective.
But the thing is, some ESG is not impact investment, right? This is what exactly what we want to know, true impact.
So the problem we have when we don't measure, as you well know, Sveta and Ben, is greenwashing.
Yeah,
Everybody can claim to be delivering fantastic impact, and they may be delivering fantastic impact in a small area of the business and dreadful impact in many other areas.
Yeah.
And so we need transparency, full transparency, on the different impacts that companies create in order to be able to assess their performance. Now, every company creates impacts in four ways: through its operations on the environment, through its employment practices on people, and through its products and supply chains on people and the environment. Mm-hmm. And if you look at what's happening in the world, we're moving towards impact accounting to measure these four impacts in monetary terms and include them in a new financial statement called an impact statement, which will show the revenues, the costs, and the impacts, the different impacts of a company. Now, the evidence for what I'm saying is that during COP26, the organization responsible for all financial accounting across the world, it's called IFRS Foundation,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. announced the creation of Sustainability Standards Board, which will be chaired by Manuel Faber, one of the great leaders of the impact movement, the former CEO of Danone. And just 10 days ago, the SEC announced that it was following the example of IFRS, in which, by the way, the SEC is a board member, by requiring, and this is up for consultation for 60 days, requiring discussion now of the mandatory disclosure of all the environmental impacts, including supply chain impacts.
Wow, companies. That's great.
Right. That's amazing. So
when do we see that in real life happening? When it will be enforced or like,
there's a political, you know, there's a political issue, obviously, because not everybody welcomes this transparency. Broadly speaking, consumers, talent, and investors want it, and companies are skeptical about it, although 100 companies across the world have been thought leaders in the valuation of impacts and the measurement of impacts and so on. So there are many companies that see this as a mega trend and that want to get ahead of that trend rather than be dragged by it, if you like, as happened with the technology, where those who didn't embrace technology early in business found themselves overtaken very often by new competitors. So when will it become law? Well, if over the next 60 days of consultation, the recommendation is upheld and the regulation is approved politically in the United States, it will become law. Mm-hmm. And it will be a very interesting parallel with what happened in the 30s. Because for those who are not aware, up until 1933, companies everywhere picked their own accounting principles, and there were no auditors to verify their numbers. And after the crash of 29, investors realized they had not had transparency on the profits of companies. They really hadn't known what companies were really making. It's hard to believe today, but a company in those days could put into hidden reserves part of its profit without telling its shareholders. Unbelievable in today's terms. And so it took 4 years after the crash to get to generally accepted accounting principles in the United States and the use of auditors. And of course, as we all know, the whole world followed after that. Well, if this becomes law this year, it'll be 3 years after the crash of COVID-19.
Yeah.
And so I can confidently say, and I can go into more detail if you're both interested.
Yes, certainly.
That it is inevitable now that we will get to impact accounting. And indeed, the report of the G7 Impact Task Force, which came out in December, you should all read it. If it's the only report you read out of this, apart from my book, which gives a more encompassing picture, you should read the G7 report, Time to Deliver. And Time to Deliver basically says the world is moving in the direction of everybody requiring impact performance to be transparent. And the next step is the valuation of impacts to take us to impact accounting, and it needs to be mandatory.
That's so great. The impact revolution. Yay. It's happening. It's happening.
Yeah.
Ronnie, from our side, what we still notice is that either the funds are not reaching very great, impactful, amazing projects which are working at solving or contributing to one or several sustainable development goals, or major financial institutions are not yet serious about allocating money to true impact companies, or they don't understand the necessity and urgency about it. In your opinion, which are the main challenges that we need to overcome for impact investing to take the lead on the investment market worldwide, so to really become the new normal?
Okay, that's a very big question you asked, Sveta. And the answer is, in my view, we're going to have a replay of what happened with tech. When technology first came, a lot of people thought that the invention of the microchip would simply revolutionize the computer industry. They didn't see it going into telecommunications with the cellular phone, and they didn't see the scope that the cellular phone and the internet together would bring for changing the business model of every single business in the world, pretty much. The same is going to happen with impact, and Tesla is the first example of what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. If you look today at the 10 most profitable and largest companies in the world, I don't know whether it's every one of the 10, but it's pretty close to every one of the 10 was created within the last third of a century.
Yeah.
Companies like Google and Facebook and Microsoft and Apple and Amazon and so on. And what happened then was the arrival of technology and entrepreneurship funded by venture capital and new thinking about new markets led to the disruption of every sector. Who could have thought in those days that retailing would be transformed by the microchip? You know, the same is going to happen with impact. Who could have thought that you could build in 20 years or so a $1 trillion car company based on new electric vehicle car technology starting from scratch? That the whole of the industry would shift to electric vehicles.
Right.
So what we're going to see driving this, to answer your question, is technology and impact coming together. Take the energy industry. We're seeing a ton of investment go into new sources of energy that are clean in terms of emissions. We're seeing focus on hydrogen as a power source, on wind, of course, for several decades now, on solar. We're looking at nuclear again to see if we can break down nuclear into small electricity generating units whose fallout in case of an accident could be more easily contained.
Yeah.
But you can see this technology disrupting industries that are creating huge environmental damage, like the car industry. So you can see the construction industry being disrupted by new entrepreneurs that come with new materials that don't require carbon emissions in order to put the products in the marketplace. We're beginning to see it with alternative proteins, where there are substitutes for meat to avoid the emissions that the cattle create, and so on. Yep. So this is going to be driven by the disruptive force of entrepreneurship and technology and impact thinking, Sveta. And the valuable companies, the valuable companies of the future, the unicorn of the future, will be a venture that's worth $1 billion. But improves the lives of 1 billion people.
People, mm-hmm. Exactly. Then it will be very easy to you to answer the next question. Where do you see impact investing in 5, 10, and 20 years?
Okay. So I think before the end of this decade, so in 5 to 7 years or so, if we're sitting around the boardroom table, we're going to be looking not just at our profit performance, but our impact performance broken down into its four key categories. We're going to be allocating the resources of the company to refashioning its product lines to reduce its sugar content so that the health impact that is created is positive rather than negative. You take a great company like Danone, it makes 5 billion euros of profit a year. It creates $8 billion of health damage because of sugar content. You compare it with General Mills. General Mills has $2 billion of positive impact because it's selling fiber instead of sugar. So we're going to see companies, not like cars, but you're going to see snack bars. You're going to see your cereal market. You're going to see your general food market beginning to deliver positive impact, and technology is going to come in to help to achieve that. We're going to see technology come into education in ways we haven't seen before. We already see business models where students can get educated and pay for their education when they've received the benefit of it by getting into a job. And so they pay nothing upfront.
Right.
We're beginning to see telemedicine. And so I think within 5 to 7 years, companies are going to be sitting down and rethinking their product strategy in terms of impact. They're going to be looking at how much money they need to invest in order to reduce their carbon emissions to an acceptable level relative to their competitors. Because what the Harvard work have been involved in, the IWAI, the Impact Weighted Accounts Initiative, shows, is there are leaders and laggards in terms of environmental performance in every sector. Not everybody is not equally bad. Some people are actually doing a much better job. So within 5 to 7 years, we're going to be looking at our impact performance in a granular way. Financial analysis will take it into account in valuing companies. We already see a correlation between companies that pollute more and lower stock market valuations in many sectors. So this is big stuff. This is you know, bringing impact into financial analysis. It's big stuff. And then if you look to 20 years from now, just making money would look like a crazy idea, a terrible thing to do. If you don't make money and deliver positive impacts, it will no longer be acceptable.
Thank you. Now we wanted to ask you some questions about your other side of your character. As an author, you have written several books, including Impact Revolution, which you can see here, but your new book called Impact, Reshaping Capitalism to Drive Real Change. What is this book about?
So this book is about the change that is occurring before our eyes, the things we've been talking about today. And that fundamentally, what this change is a response to the great environmental and social challenges we face. Because most people now realize that these changes come in order to improve our society and in order to improve our environment, because governments can't do it. If the result of profit seeking is the destruction of the planet and rebellion within our societies, then in order to prevent that, our economic system needs to change. And transparency on impacts is the fulcrum, the base on which the lever that finance represents to change the world. So it's not surprising that our system is being changed by capital flows because we have a capitalist system.
Yeah.
And the book is about how this impact thinking is disrupting investment, business, entrepreneurship, philanthropy, and government.
And who should read the book? Will people without financial background understand that?
Totally. The book is approachable for everyone, and I get messages from people from all walks of life. Each one of us has a role to play in this impact revolution. And by reading the book, you will find your own place in it.
And how is this book different from your other books on this topic?
So this book follows on the one that you have as a backdrop on impact, which was actually taken from the manuscript as I was writing Impact, Reshaping Capitalism. I wanted the pamphlet that was a bit like the Little Red Book, where in half an hour you could totally understand what all of this is about, because I felt it would be more accessible for younger people in particular, who don't have patience with big terms. Not that impact is a big term.
200 pages, impact, no?
Impact is 200 pages, so it's not a big term. I cut that down by half too. My first book, The Second Bounce of the Ball, was about entrepreneurship and my experience at Apex, building up a venture firm and backing entrepreneurs.
Okay. And I have a lot of friends who are also quite billionaires, but they are quite very gray hair and old grouchy people. Would they also love this book?
Absolutely. I had conversations 5 years ago with people in the financial world, where obviously I've spent my career and so have a lot of friends. And people then were listening to me saying, well, we know he's not a crackpot and this can't be idiotic, but is it really going to happen? And today, what I'm hearing from them is it's eye-opening. You've opened our eyes, you saw it before us, and you've opened our eyes to the change which is occurring in our economies today. So give it to the grouchiest capitalists that you know.
And where can you find the book? In Amazon or?
So it's been translated into 10 languages. For those of you who are French speakers, it exists in French, it exists in German, it exists in Italian. So we cover the main Swiss languages, but it's also in Chinese, in Korean, in Japanese, and
wow,
Croatian, and Spanish. In Taiwan, Chinese as well. So you can buy it from any bookshop or from Amazon.
Okay. I know what I'm going to do after the program. And how can our global audience, Ronnie, support Impact Revolution? Whatever you do, how can they support your mission, our mission? I mean, it's very similar. What would you say?
Well, the most powerful way to do it, if we have assets, is through investment. So bringing your portfolio away from polluting companies and companies that use child labor and so on, devoting 10 or 20% of your portfolio to impact investment, and similarly for your pension funds and so on and so forth, would be the most powerful contribution you can make. The next, if you are a business, is to bring your business in line with this new thinking. Start by measuring your outcomes, because soon you're going to be compelled to do so. Start by measuring them now and getting your impact act together. You will find that it helps you to attract talent, consumers, and investors, and that it delivers better profit than ignoring impact and running the risk of regulation, taxation, and talent and consumers and investors moving away from you. I mean, if you're an entrepreneur, bring impact to the center of your venture in the way that Tesla has done. If you're a philanthropist, begin to think of outcomes-based vehicles, social impact bonds from your endowment, or in the US, it's acceptable to do it even from your grant allocation. Think of investing in outcomes funds where you only make your charitable donation if a social objective like the number of prisoners going down has been achieved. That's the future.
I mean, I just wanted to ask you maybe in your opinion, because many of my friends, and you're yourself also based out of New York, is they're old investors. So they have been investing in traditional ways for the last 30 years, 40 years. So what do you tell them to make them change their mind or change their habit? Because it is something that is not new. It is 30, 40 years of habit that they have in investing.
I say to them, look at what's happening in financial markets. Look at what's happened to fossil fuel indices. Sure, we're getting a spike now for geopolitical reasons, but it doesn't change the trend.
Yeah.
Look at what's happened with clean energy indices. Look at the value creation that has come from investing in companies like Tesla. That's the future. The idea that you can continue to invest in things that do harm and make money, like investing in tobacco companies or coal companies, isn't going to sit well with your children or with your friends. It's going to become unacceptable. So if you want to be proud of what you've achieved in your business career or in your career as an investor, begin now to optimize risk, return, and impact. You'll do better as a result of it financially, and you'll find greater fulfillment too.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good advice. Ronnie, the time is running out, and to round our conversation, just very last short call to action to our global audience, which you could share.
Please think about what we've discussed today, read the book and pass it on to others. And if you agree with it, then talk to your children about it. You'll find they're already convinced most of the time. And begin to adjust your spending, your management of your business, and your investment portfolio to deliver impact as well as profit.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ronnie. Thank you for coming.
Yes.
And we hope to see you live on one of the conferences or events. Thank you so much for being with us today. It was a great pleasure.
You. Bye. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Bye-bye. Well, yes, dear viewers, with this, the episode 9 ends today on a very positive revolution mood note. And we open our season in May, on 13th of May, am I correct? Right, with the most inspiring guest. You want to share who it will be, or should we keep it?
We will keep it.
You will keep it. Okay, subscribe, and then you will be informed. It's one of the celebrities who is coming to open the season. And yes, as for now, you got more when you invest.
So always invest with impact.
Exactly. You get more when you give back. I think I said it wrong. I'm too much excited. Yes.
No, he was amazing. Absolutely amazing.
So always invest with impact. Bye for now.
Bye-bye. Hey, we hope you enjoyed this episode of TV show Swiss Impact with Banerjees.
Make sure you check out the next one, and also find us on Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, Spotify, podcasts, and any of your favorite social media places.
And please subscribe to our channel so you know when we release new episodes.
And also leave us some feedback to help us grow this awesome impact community.
We look forward to sharing the next episode with you. And until then,
impact is best when you invest.